Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Daniel Mogliano. With me is my co-host, Lloyd Ribner. This is the road to Pasadena as we get you ready for week 12. We have a packed show. As always, with us today is the athletic director, former head coach, and 2010 College Football Hall of Famer, Barry Alvarez, as well as Iowa play-by-play man Gary Dolphin and Northwestern linebacker Nate Williams from the Wildcats, who are in the top 25 in the coaches' poll. Also joining us today to talk a little NFL draft and the top Big Ten prospects will be Joe Everett, who's joined the NFL Draft Bible team, as well as our weekly man, Justin Van Fulpen, here on College Football Insiders Radio to talk some NFL draft. And also, as always, the Reverend Ralph Mancini. And we're going to go a little overtime this week, so we're going to spill past the 6 o'clock hour here in the Eastern time and talk a little more Big Ten football. So we hope you join us on All Access Football Radio. I also want to remind everybody to join us on Twitter, where you can follow us at Twitter/CFB Insiders. And don't forget to listen to College Football Insiders on Block Talk Radio. That's blocktalkradio.com/College Football Insiders. Lloyd, how's it going? Thanks for joining us again as we hit show number 3.
Always happy to be here. Really excited for this jam-packed show that we have. Great guests coming on. And finally, exciting week in the Big Ten, which we haven't had since we started the show. So I'm really pumped to start talking about that and the Big Ten title race.
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be an exciting weekend. You know, a couple of big games that look like they will decide the Big Ten, or could at least be play a role in deciding the Big Ten. And one of those is going to take place in Kinnick Stadium this week in Iowa City. And that brings us to our first guest of the day, and it is Gary Dolphin, the play-by-play man for those Iowa Hawkeyes. Gary, I'd like to welcome you to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for the musical interlude there, guys. That sounded awfully well. Hopefully, I'm hearing the band play that song a lot after Iowa touchdowns this weekend.
Yeah, I hear you, Gary. Gary, let me start with the Iowa team this year. You know, they're 7-3, 4-2 in the Big Ten. It's not a bad year by any standard, but I'm taking some flack here from my the people here, our current staff, because I picked Iowa last year to win the Big Ten. I picked them again this year as a top five team. So I'm kind of the Mr. Iowa here at College Football Insiders home base in New York. What happened to my Hawkeyes this year? They just seem to they can't put it together on the road.
They've had their issues on the road, and ironically, it's come from penalties by a veteran offensive team. A lot of penalties. They survived those penalties at Indiana, did not survive them last week at Northwestern. Poor play by special teams, which, as you guys know, has always been a staple of a Kirk Ferentz coach team. Special teams gave up 3 touchdowns at Arizona, and they ended up getting beat by 34-27. They lose by 1 at home to obviously a very good Wisconsin team off a fake punt, but that's a game that Iowa was going to win. Let a fake punt keep a drive alive late in the game. And as you know, Wisconsin scored with a minute to play. And then last week at Northwestern, it was penalties. It was the inability and third down. You know, Iowa's been batting about .500, Dan, on third down this year. Going into last week's game, they end up 2 of 14 on third down. Very uncharacteristic of the Iowa offense. The defense has played fine. I kind of chuckled this week at the defense stepping on their tongues or supposedly tired out at Northwestern last week. Well, Northwestern ran 83 plays out of that quick-moving pistol. Any defense would be tired when they make you run sideline to sideline like that. So, and as Kirk Ferentz likes to say, we really can't live up to others' expectations. We can only live up to our own expectations, own being the players. And there's no question. They had on the board this year to win the Big Ten championship, to get to the Rose Bowl. That doesn't look like it's going to happen now. Sometimes fate is cruel. Last year, everybody felt it was a bonus when they went 11-2 and won the Orange Bowl, but this was the year they were pointing to because of 26 seniors. and save for a few plays here and there, it just hasn't worked out. But as you say, 7-3 is still a really good year. They got a chance to finish 9-3, 6-2 in the Big Ten, and play in another New Year's Day bowl game. And their approach right now, folks, is that's the best they can do. So let's deal in the reality and the here and now, and not worry about what other people are saying.
Hey, Gary, Lloyd Ribner here. Just wanted to ask you, Iowa's dropped 11 of 12 in the series against the Buckeyes, and Ohio State's the only team that four-year Hawkeye seniors have not beaten in their career. What do the Hawkeyes have to do this weekend to make a change?
Real simple, Lloyd. They got to play a clean football game. Ohio State leads the Big Ten in plus turnover ratio. Iowa is plus 12, so the Hawks are very good in that area as well, not quite as good as Ohio State. This is an Iowa offense that I think can move the ball and score touchdowns on the Buckeyes. If Ohio State has an Achilles heel, it's the secondary. They've been riddled with injuries at the safety position, and in that secondary, they're very good. Don't get me wrong. They've got a lot of talent there, but they did have to replace six starters coming into this season. They've gotten better, and they're starting to hit their stride. But that said, it's in Kinnick Stadium. It's Ricky Stanzi's swan song, along with 26 other seniors. I find it hard to believe that they won't be sky-high with emotion. Hopefully not too sky-high, but I got to believe that this game, at least their mindset, is very similar to Michigan State a few weeks ago when they hung 30 on the Spartans in the first half. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen Saturday, but they came off a loss, a very tough loss that week as well with Wisconsin. And the script is very similar to last week, a bitter defeat, losing in the last minute of play at Northwestern. I really look for these guys to bounce back because of that senior leadership.
And we're talking to Gary Dolphin, the play-by-play man from Iowa. You can also read Dolphin's views on Hawkeye All Access, and he also hosts a TV weekly show with Kirk Friends every week.
Gary, you spoke about the maybe overrated, a little bit weak Buckeye secondary. In my opinion, the key to the game for Iowa this week is going to be Marvin McNutt. The key matchup is going to be Marvin McNutt against Chimdi Chekwa on the outside. I was wondering what you think about that matchup and who you think has the advantage.
Not sure who has the advantage. I mean, I've seen Ohio State bits and pieces, Lloyd, of maybe three or four games. We got a chance to watch a little bit of the Penn State the second half last week on the bus ride home from Chicago, and Ohio State really looked good all over the field, not just at the cornerback position. He's a very good player, obviously, but I like Marvin McNutt's chances in this matchup. You know, he's 6'4", he's 215 pounds, he's the biggest receiver target that Iowa's had in some time, and he's had seven catches each of the last 2 weeks. He's been a big play receiver for Ricky Stanzi this year. He's got the biggest, strongest hands of anybody on the team in terms of catching the football. So I think this is his moment. He's a spotlight kind of guy. All you got to do is go back to that Michigan State game in East Lansing last year in prime time when he caught the touchdown pass on the quick slant on the final play of the game. Now, that said, let's not forget the now all-time leading pass catcher in the history of Iowa football is Darrell Johnson Koulianos, and DJK is from Youngstown. I can promise you his coals are stoked for his last go-around with the Buckeyes this weekend. Ricky Stanzi's from Mentor Catholic right outside of Cleveland. There's probably eight or nine guys from Ohio on this Iowa roster. And although Marvin McNutt is a key cog, DJK is a guy I would keep my eye on Saturday.
Gary, before I let you go, I got one more for you, and that's the progress that Ricky Stanzi has made this year. You know, last year he was kind of a up-and-down, hit-or-miss kind of quarterback and made those big plays at the end of the game. This week, interceptions are way down, completion percentages is up. What do you credit that to?
It's as simple as him being a year smarter and making better decisions, Daniel. He told me in the preseason that he went back after the Orange Bowl, and he looked at every snap of every game, every series, every sequence. He's a film room study guy anyway. I mean, he's passionate about watching tape. He went back and looked at every opponent, thought perhaps they were junking up the defenses on him or disguising things or perhaps throwing things at him that he hadn't seen before, and it was basically on him. He had 17 touchdown passes a year ago, but 15 interceptions, and four of them went the other way for pick sixes. And so what he did is he said, look, I realized I don't have to score a touchdown on every pass play. I can take a sack, I can throw it away and live for the next down. And I think a lot of that was just a maturation process. You know, he's a fifth-year senior, just a smarter guy. He's got all the size you need at 6'4", 240 pounds. He's not physically arm strength, the most gifted guy in college football, but he's just making better decisions. He's just a year smarter, and I think it's as simple as that.
All right, Gary, I know you got to run to do your own radio show there in Iowa. Thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time on this big game.
Glad to do it, guys. It should be a great atmosphere on Saturday, and glad to be on with you anytime. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Gary.
And that was Gary Dolphin, the play-by-play man there for the Iowa Hawkeyes. And as I mentioned, he also does the TV show with Kirk Ferentz, the head coach there in Iowa. Lloyd, I know we're going to talk a little bit more about this game later as we wait for athletic director. I was just about to say Coach Alvarez. I don't know. I always feel like once you're a coach, you're always coach. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Absolutely.
Here on College Football Insiders, you know, we've had Lou Holtz on. I can't never say, you know, welcome Lou Holtz. I got to
yeah,
say Coach Holtz coming on.
Coach Alvarez.
So, yeah.
AD Alvarez just it doesn't have the same ring.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. Even though it's like a higher status,
yeah.
I guess, you know, you're the boss of the coach, but still it doesn't have the same ring to it, you know, as we wait for him to come on. What are your thoughts on what Gary said about the Hawkeyes coming into this game?
I definitely agree with what Gary said. It's a big game for Iowa, trying to put a little bit of a finishing touch on a season that's been kind of a disappointment. It is senior day for the Iowa Hawkeyes, so there's going to be a lot of emotions running through in Kinnick Stadium, and it's going to be a tough atmosphere for Ohio State to go on the road and pull out a win.
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be, you know, we're going to reserve our picks for later on, leave a little suspense. I don't know how much suspense there is. You know, people have been following us, our opinions, and know our backgrounds. You know, I don't know if we're going to fool anybody with our picks, but it's definitely going to be an interesting game. I think I wouldn't be surprised. One thing that I'm really looking forward to in this matchup is I do think we have a chance to maybe see the best performance by both of these teams this year. I think, you know, maybe not the best performance considering what Iowa did to Michigan State, but I think both teams are going to bring their A game.
I would have to agree with you. I think both teams were prepping themselves for a year that could be a potential national championship year with the amount of returning talent that both teams have. Both squads had an early loss in conference that kind of put a damper on their season. And this could be a way for both teams to kind of save that season at the end with a big victory against another big-time Big Ten school.
All right, I just want to remind everybody listening to the Road to Pasadena here on All Access Football Radio. We also bring you College Football Insiders Radio, and you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/CFBInsiders.com. And don't forget to check out all our player spotlights, coaches' corners on blogtalkradio.com/collegefootballinsiders. This week I was able to speak to BYU athletic director Tom Homo on a bunch of interesting topics in the world of college football. Also go to NFLDraftBible.com to check out our columns on the NFL, the draft, as well as college football, including Lloyd's weekly 3rd and 10 column. And I believe we have our next guest on cue, and that will be the Wisconsin Athletic Director, Coach Barry Alvarez. Coach Alvarez, how are you? Thanks for joining us today.
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Coach. It's a pleasure to have you on. We met back in the spring in New York as you were part of the 2010 class for the College Football Hall of Fame. Let's start there and, you know, what that honor means to you. And, you know, the induction will be coming up in less than a month in December in New York.
Well, it's a great honor. And you think about, you know, that's what I've chosen as a profession is to be a football coach. And after you finish your career, for your peers to vote you into the Hall of Fame is it's quite an honor, and it's very humbling.
Congratulations once again, Barry, Coach Alvarez. I just wanted to ask you a quick question about the Wisconsin Badgers. A lot of people have been talking about running up the score this week. I personally don't think that Coach Bielema did any such thing. I subscribe to the theory that if you don't want them to stop, don't let them in the end zone. He had his backups out there. You know, this isn't high school football. You're not worried about the other coaches' feelings. It's two Big Ten programs. And the fact is that there were 3 passes in all of the fourth quarter, and 7 of the 21 points were scored off of a pick six. yet there seems to be an incredible amount of national attention directed towards the story. I was wondering what your feelings about that are.
Well, I think most of the people who weighed in on it didn't see the game. You know, I think they saw the score and just anticipated what went on. Then they look at the box score and see a long touchdown pass in the fourth quarter, yet that was a freshman backup quarterback who really hasn't had a chance to play much, throwing to another freshman. It was a third and I believe eight. And you got to give the guys, you got to give your backups an opportunity to play and compete. You know, the last touchdown, we had scout team players in there who all they did all week was run Indiana plays off of cards. You know, and it was four runs, and then we went 80 yards for a touchdown in four runs. You can't tell those guys not to play hard. I didn't think we tried to run the score up. We executed the offense, and I thought Bill Lynch was very classy and said it's on them. You know, they have a responsibility, and I think you know, he saw what Brett was doing. We were running the ball the majority of the time, and you can't take the knee. That's a bigger slap in the face.
And we're talking to the athletic director, Coach Barry Alvarez from Wisconsin. Coach Alvarez is the only Big Ten coach in history to win back-to-back Rose Bowl. He also sports the highest all-time bowl winning percentage for coaches with at least 11 bowl appearances. That's a 727 winning percentage and an overall record of 118-73-4. Coach Alvarez, let me ask you about this year's unit. I mean, they have a very good chance to go 11-1 if they can win these last couple games, maybe make a Rose Bowl and you know, rival your best teams. Where do you think this team could stack up among the all-time teams at Wisconsin?
You know, I like this team. I particularly like our offense. This has to be one of our better offensive lines. It's very deep. I think we have seven offensive linemen who have started at one time or another during their career. You know, we're deep at running back. John Clay was last year's Big Ten Player of the Year. He won't play again this week. I mean, that's a couple weeks in a row that he's been injured, and other players have stepped up and you know, and done a great job for us. We have good quarterback play. I don't think this team's as good defensively as some of my better teams, but offensively they certainly match up.
I'd have to agree with that, Coach. I think your team did have some better defenses there. You mentioned the offensive line, and I think it's very possible this is the best offensive line in the country in college football. A couple of players that I think will be playing on Sundays in a year or two. Coach, talk about when you kind of built this program and how it did kind of go on the foundation of the offensive line there at Wisconsin.
Right. Well, when I took the job, and I think the first thing a head coach has to do when he takes a position is see what type of athletes you can recruit consistently. And you look at the state of Wisconsin, you know, we don't have an abundance of Division I players year in and year out. You know, usually we're going to have a handful or two players, not a lot of skilled players, but we're going to have a lot of big linemen. And so I think that was a good starting point. That's what my plan was, is to, you know, always have a good offensive line, build a team on, you know, a sound running game, you know, tough physical, good fundamental teams, but it all started with the offensive line. I felt like we can consistently recruit big linemen and get them where we needed them to be, and that's basically what we've done here.
Coach, let me expand it a little bit here and talk more broader terms in the Big Ten. They just announced that an agreement with Fox Sports to broadcast the Big Ten championship game. That's going to be in Indianapolis. What are your thoughts in general on this Big Ten expansion that we're going to see next year and playing that championship game? I know a lot of people in the Big Ten love the tradition, and this is really going in a different direction.
Well, you know, this is our second expansion in the last 20 years, Penn State being the first back in the early 90s. I think Nebraska is a very good fit. I think philosophically their university is very similar to a Big Ten university. It's an AAU school. They're broad-based. And, you know, it brings a brand, another brand, to our league. You know, the divisions, you know, I think are fair. I just think it makes us pertinent
in December. You know, a few years ago, if you remember, Michigan and Ohio State were 1-2 in the country, and they played the last game of the season. It was a shootout, very close game, and Michigan was still number two after that. After they lost that game, you know, after everybody plays in the playoffs, you know, they dropped about two or three spots without playing because the Big Ten wasn't relevant. We you know, people forget about you when you're not playing in those games.
Barry, the Wisconsin Badgers are now ranked number 7 in the BCS standings. Up there with them as one-loss teams, LSU, Stanford, and Nebraska. I was wondering how you would decipher a one-loss AQ program versus an undefeated non-AQ program such as a TCU or Boise State.
Yeah, you know what? I've seen both of them play. They're excellent teams. As a matter of fact, I think this is a better Boise team than the one that beat Oklahoma a few years ago. I think they're a little more physical. I tell you the thing that that I see. You know, here we had a month stretch where we play an arch rival in Minnesota. We turn around the next week and you play Michigan State. Then you turn around the next week and you play Ohio State, and then turn around and go to Iowa. Now, we played Iowa with minus 7 starters. Guys were beat up. I don't think that, you know, I just don't see them having to go through that type of a schedule. And they're they're both very good football teams, but I think you have to earn your way into a championship game. They've been participants in the BCS. But to get to a championship game, I think you have to go through a grinder, much like some of the teams in the Southeast Conference. If you take a look at some of the schedules and month stretches that they go through, it's not just pointing to 1, 2, or 3 games a year.
Coach, I got another big question, big picture question for you. As an athletic director, what are your thoughts on you know, this season, one of the biggest stories from beginning to end has been players getting payments, you know, whether it be from agents or, you know, I know you can't comment on any individual player, but, you know, the Cam Newton story, just in general, you know, as an athletic director, how much does this concern you and does that impact at all how you do your job?
You're talking about payment by, you know, from agents to players? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, you know, anytime that comes to light, you're as an administrator, former coach, you're always worried about that. I don't think it's as prevalent as some people may think. I think it's out there. I think we have to police ourselves. And when there is a situation that's proven, I think then the NC2A has to come down hard on that individual and that school and those involved.
Barry, one of the things that I am a proponent of is the college baseball rule, which is where a player out of high school has the option whether to go to college or the pros, so that you allow that kid the option of a choice of what they want to do with their lives. But then once they commit to the NCAA, they have to be there for at least 3 seasons. I think that this would be a great thing both for football, but especially for basketball, where the one-and-done rule is very questionable. I was wondering what your thoughts on a rule like that, which the NCAA obviously feels to be just because it's already in place for one of their sports.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I'd say at least 2 years for college basketball. You don't have to worry about it in football because it never happens. But, you know, for a player, you know, and you see it now, if they're coming out of high school and they want to play go to the NBA or play professional basketball, they're going overseas to play. And I think everyone should have that right. I don't like the one and done coming in for 1 year. You know, you're not much of a student. You know, you're really not involved in that university, yet you're helping them win games and you're in and out of there. And so I just don't think that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. I don't like that. I'd like at least a minimum of 2 years, but I think a person should have an option if, you know, this is going to be your livelihood and and somebody's going to write you a contract, you certainly have the right to do that.
And Coach Alvarez, you know, I think it seems to me that a lot of these big issues outside the line, so to speak, regarding college athletics, you know, money is kind of at the root of these issues. So what are your thoughts on, you know, a play for pay, you know, players getting paid as a potential solution?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to take a step back and see how many programs, athletic programs in the country are making money. And there probably aren't a dozen of them. And to turn around, and who are you going to pay? You can't just pay football and basketball. Now you have Title IX issues. You have to pay all your athletes, male and female, and no one could afford to do that.
I completely agree with you, Coach Alvarez. My only other question is, in regards to pay for play, is when an individual player, such as in the past a Florida player like Tim Tebow, and their jersey is sold without their name on the back, but the number 15 is on the front, and there are thousands and thousands of people out there buying Tim Tebow nameless jerseys, and the university is profiting from that. What do you think about something like that?
Well, I mean, he signed to come to the university. He's a college football player. In exchange for his expertise in playing, he gets an education that's worth quite a bit of money. I mean, that's a contract that is signed. And, where do you say, you can't turn college athletics into pro athletics. How are you going to structure salary? How are you going to structure how you pay people? It just doesn't work. Now, I will say this. The NCAA has loosened up as far as enabling players, if they have issues at home, there's a student activity fund, the Pell Grant that's issued to them. Our players are being treated fairly.
Coach, before we let you go, I got to ask you about this week's big game for the Badgers heading into the Big House. You coached there many times. Well, what are your thoughts on this weekend's contest?
Well, I think it's going to be quite a game. I think Rich has got a good football team. I think offensively they're very dangerous, very explosive. We've already talked about our offense, but I could see a shootout.
All right, that is Coach. Thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time, and we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks when you're in New York for the College Football Hall of Fame induction. Congratulations again.
Okay, thanks, guys. Good visiting with you.
And that was the athletic director, Barry Alvarez, former head coach there, really built the program that we're seeing today. You know, Bielema was his assistant, took over for him. When I was a kid just starting to watch college football, Wisconsin was, never a bowl team. And they've become a team that you expect to be a bowl team year in and year out.
Yeah, he's kind of the equivalent in basketball of a Jim Boeheim or a Calhoun who's kind of come in, taken a localized program and built it into a national power where now everybody in the country watches Wisconsin football on Sundays.
Yeah, it's come to the point where it's expected for them to be a good team and have a good year. You're listening to The Road to Pasadena here on All Access Football Radio. Oh, don't forget to go to NFLDraftBible.com. Check out all our columns, including Lloyd's weekly 3rd and 10 column, which he posted earlier this week. We also want to let you in on our founder here, the president and founder of NFL Draft Bible, Rick Saratella. He will be on the Jody Mack Show in New York, 1050 ESPN Radio, on Saturday morning before the college football games start there on Saturday. That's ESPN Radio 1050 in New York. I'm sure you can catch that online as well. Lloyd, a lot of interesting things are going on in the Big Ten. A bunch of teams still in the race. Obviously, it looks like it's coming down to a three-team race this year in the Big Ten right now. Where we at? It's Michigan State, Iowa, Wisconsin, who just spoke to Barry Alvarez. It's been a pretty interesting week. You mentioned the Wisconsin thing. I tend to agree with you. I mean, I don't know if I needed a deep throw from the Badgers,
yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, this isn't you're not playing a Division I AA school. These are all big boys. They're not pro teams, but they're pretty darn close.
Yeah, if you're coming in to play Big Ten football against another Big Ten opponent, you should have no trouble holding your own. If anything, I would think it would be more embarrassing. What are you, you're going to drive. They had two plays within the five-yard line, or at least within the 10, it was and goal, where they threw the ball. Would you rather them, as an Indiana fan or player, them take a knee? To me, that's more embarrassing, that you're playing another Big Ten team and they are taking a knee on the goal line. You can't get worse than that. I mean, that has to be the worst feeling in the world, that the other team feels so bad for you when you're supposed to be on the same level of competition that they are saying, we're not going to score anymore because we just don't feel right doing it.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. I think that's a bigger embarrassment, a team, you know, taking a knee there or something like that to try to do it. And I think the other big news, which I kind of referenced to with Barry Alvarez, was the Big Ten championship announcement, you know, being on Fox, being in Indianapolis, Lucas Oil Stadium is going to be where it's going to be, and you're going to watch it on Fox. I spoke to Desmond Howard back in the spring. I met him and Barry at the same time in New York. I also spoke to Syracuse running back coach Tyrone Wheatley, another former Michigan Wolverine. And both of them, you know, they kind of had mixed feelings and weren't necessarily so gung-ho about this Big Ten championship game. And it both kind of felt like, you mean after we play Ohio State and, you know, theoretically you beat Ohio State to get to the Big Ten championship game, if you're a Michigan man, like, now you're supposed to get up again for the big game the following week? They weren't necessarily fans of this concept. I'm just curious, as a Buckeye and a Big Ten man, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, obviously, as a Buckeye fan, I think the game is Ohio State-Michigan. It's been down since that big game that Coach Alvarez spoke about a little bit before in 2006 when it was 1-2. But it is tough to play a big monumental game like that and then have to go to a neutral site indoors, which that is not Big Ten football. Big Ten football is not about playing indoors. It's not about playing in perfect weather. That late in the season, you should be outdoors in the snow, freezing your buns off at a game, and not being all comfortable sitting inside in this beautiful, luxurious new stadium that they have in Indianapolis.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, I don't know many people that would argue with that. It would have been interesting to see what Coach Alvarez would have thought. I'm sure, you know, Wisconsin, where they are located, and the style of football, with the style of football they play, you know, they want to play in the cold and in the elements. And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, especially when you see the NFL bringing the Super Bowl to New York and kind of taking that chance, you would think a conference like the Big Ten, with their tradition and their style of play, and I think there's enough, you know, storied stadiums that these teams play in. Why not give a home team a game either?
A home team or one of the stadiums within the Big Ten footprint, a Soldier Field, Lambeau Field, you know, any of those stadiums would do just fine. They have history. They're outdoors. They're in the Big Ten footprint. It's not a difficult trip. You know, as much as I dislike having the championship game after a big-time rivalry game, the fact is, like Coach Alvarez said, the Big Ten is not relevant for a month. There's a month that goes by where nobody talks about Big Ten football, and it's time for the Big Ten to jump into the modern era and have a championship game and have a nationally broadcast game with their two best teams showing off. My only negative, and I love Fox Sports for football, for NFL football and for Major League Baseball and the sorts, but in the past, Fox has had the BCS games recently on their network, and I just find it a little weird that a network that really doesn't have much college football on their programming, unless you count their Fox Sports local programming, they have absolutely no affiliation with college football, and for 6 years we're going to have once again people who haven't really called a game all year calling a college football game. The only positive is that I heard that the Big Ten Network, if you want to call this a positive, will do some talent sharing with Fox to try and give it that home edge feel to it.
All right, so at least there'll be announcers that have followed the sport all year long. I mean,
these sideline reporters, I don't know how they're sharing the talent duties, but as reported, as I heard on Big Ten Network, that they will be sharing talents.
Now, I remember a couple of years ago, I can't remember if it was a championship game or it might have been when LSU played Notre Dame and Russell spanked Brady Quinn's Fighting Irish. I forget which game it was. I remember it was an LSU game, and Bradshaw and Howie Long did it. And I actually thought they did a pretty decent job. I was surprised. But something does feel wrong.
It feels wrong. There's just something missing there.
When somebody who hasn't covered college football all season long suddenly is going to jump on the bandwagon of what is arguably one of the biggest the biggest game of the year in the sport. All right, Lloyd, it's time for our draft segment, and we have our two guests with us right now. One is Mr. Justin Van Fulpen, our draft guru, who's with us each and every week. And we also have a newbie on board making his all-access football debut here on the road to Pasadena, and that is Joe Everett, who's newly to the NFL Draft Bible team. He's also from rookiedraft.com, and you can check out Joe's columns on NFLDraftBible.com. He has a brand-new mock draft. That's right, I said it. I'm mock draft. I know how much the listeners out there love their mock drafts, as well as his weekly risers and fallers. Joe, Justin, thanks for joining us. How's it going, guys?
Good. How's it going? Real good. Real good.
All right. Let's start with Justin. What we're going to do here is have both of you guys give us your top five Big Ten prospects for the NFL. And Justin, we'll let you lead off.
Well, I mean, obviously, as far as we've had a lot of talent in the Big Ten, but as far as my top five really focuses on the big uglies, as we'd like to call them, as far as really that offense and defensive line. Number one starts with a guy who's really rising up a lot of people's draft boards, and that's Ryan Kerrington from Purdue, the defensive end. Obviously, a major season, 62 tackles, 23 tackles for loss, and 11 and a half sacks, and really a guy who a lot of people like going in, first round there. And then I go with a guy who's probably sliding down a number of draft boards just because he hasn't been as productive as wanted. But I still have him as my number two as far as in the Big Ten. That's Adrian Claiborne, the defensive end from Iowa. Then number three, another four is Big Ugly, offensive tackle Gabe Karimi from Wisconsin. Number four, another guy who's probably sliding a little bit, Cameron Hayward from Ohio State, the defensive end. And then to rounding out my top five Big Ten for senior draft prospects is Stephen Wynuski from the interior offensive lineman from Penn State. And I think really as far as these top five guys are all guys who are going to be, surefire first-round picks, with Newski just because he plays the interior offensive line, probably would slip a little bit into the mid-second round. But as far as those defensive linemen and then Karimi, I think are all pretty much locks in the first round, even though Hayward and Claiborne have slid based on not great production this season.
That's Justin's top five. Let's head over to Joe. Why don't you give us your top five?
Well, it's very similar, and I agree on the riser in Kerrigan. I've got a hot column coming out, the hot and cold, the up and down, and Kerrigan is on his way up. I think his hair is on fire last game I checked. He single-handedly beat Michigan, and the guy has just now got all the records. He's really, I think I'd have to agree, a first-rounder, but I still have Claiborne up at the top. The guy has a tremendous base strength. He's going to be appealing to a lot of teams, although the last game he was huffing and puffing. They're going to check his motor. It depends on how he tests still, though. Elite prospect. And I've got Cameron Hayward as well. I mean, the bloodlines, the son of Ironhead himself, he's a massive guy, and he's also a versatile player that could fit in a lot of defenses. 3-4 teams will still be looking at him. I don't know about his ability to be an elite pass rusher, so that's where he has been falling down draft boards, whereas some of the other prospects are shining a little brighter. And Creamy is, he's just a massive guy. I've got him just on the verge of being a first-rounder, but the last guy I have is Greg Jones, linebacker, Michigan State. He's still a great player. Once again, though, it's the interior guys. If you have a linebacker, no matter how good he is side to side and how athletic Jones is, the fact that he doesn't rush the passer might edge him out of the first round, though I still think he's going to be a heck of a player and still probably a second-round prospect, maybe a little bit higher touted than Donald Brown of last year, Donald Butler, rather, from Washington. So I really like Jones' chances coming in the draft.
Hey, Joe, let me ask you, both of you guys have Cameron Hayward in there, and you alluded to, kind of a disappointing season from Claiborne. And while I agree with Joe, he would still be my number one guy. I have to agree 100%. He hasn't put together the type of season he did last year. But I think Cameron Hayward also has been somewhat disappointing this year. He really hasn't been that much of an impact player. Joe, why do you still rank him so high?
Well, like I say, it's the bloodlines that some coaches just believe in that moreover than anything. We only have to look so far back to Mr. Bobby Carpenter being drafted by the Cowboys just because he's the son of, It's like, well, that doesn't necessarily mean he's the same player. But Hayward has that ability, and he still does have imposing size. And as a five tech, teams do value that over some other positions to where, he's still got to be, in this top five conversation of the Big Ten.
And Justin, let me ask you, Greg Jones, who was in Joe's top five, he didn't make yours. How close was he, and do you think he has a chance to be a first-rounder?
Well, I don't think he's got a chance to be a first-rounder. And he's a guy who, I think is sliding, talking with a lot of people. I think as far as the media and that standpoint, there's a lot of hype on him. He makes a lot of plays, but there's some deficiency in his game. Doesn't like to take on blocks, isn't physical at the point of attack. He's a great athlete, and I think he's going to be a great, football player and as far as down the road. But I just don't see him being a first-round pick. I think he's sliding. I think he'll probably end up being a third-round pick there. So he, to me, he's not a guy who, was close to making my top, five in the Big Ten.
All right. Both you guys have Ryan Kerrigan right at the top of your board. My co-host has a little bit of a man crush on Ryan Kerrigan. Big fan. Do you see him transitioning to the NFL more as a 3-4 rush outside linebacker or adding a little bit more size and being more of a 4-3 D end?
I think he's a guy to me who's, 6'4", 263. I think he's right there as a guy who, is going to be a 4-3, defensive end. Obviously, with a lot of teams, half the NFL being, split right down the middle, 3-4, 4-3, he appeals, I think, to a lot of teams, with his versatility. But I think his best position is what he plays in college, and that is with his hand on the ground, getting upfield, rushing the passer. To me, he's a guy like we had saw last year with Brandon Graham, who was, there was some talk about him dropping, being a 3-4 guy. He goes as far as to a 4-3 defense there in Philadelphia, and that's what I see as far as with Carrington, another guy, Big Ten ties, some talk about maybe a 3-4 outside linebacker. But when it's all said and done, I think his best position is the defensive end in the 4-3.
Joe, I was just wondering – neither of you guys have one skill position player in your top five. Wondering if either of you have any skill position players maybe to watch for, either for the rest of the year or in the combine out of the Big Ten, who might be able to impress and move up the draft board a little bit.
Well, if it's me, it's at Mikel LeShore, the Illinois back. Other than Denard Robinson, this guy is the best rusher in the Big Ten right now. Looking at the numbers, he's averaging 100 a clip. And, he's got a pretty cake matchup. He's probably going to get another 100 yards, a couple of touchdowns. That's no fault of his own. And I think he's a guy that we could watch for the rest of the season that, maybe it depends a lot on his workouts, actually, not even a maybe. He needs to run a fast 40 for being the size that he is, but if he impresses in the workouts and continues at the road, at the clip he's on, he could be a second-round type back, a possible hardesty value of last year. The guy's definitely got game, and as far as where he was on the radar before the season, he's definitely going to factor into that draft conversation. But, it's tough pickings here in the Big Ten. Just as Justin said, there's a lot of good big uglies that are taking center stage.
All right, Justin, let me ask you, week 12 is coming up. It's the penultimate weekend in Big Ten football. Give us a guy to watch this week that we should keep an eye on.
Well, I think as far as, going back to big uglies, like our theme was today, is a guy who I really like and who's been moving up draft boards, and that's offensive tackle DJ Young with Michigan State. He was a transfer from as far as Bowling Green, you know, playing the left tackle position there with Michigan State, you know, obviously atop the Big Ten. He goes against, obviously, my number one guy in the Big Ten, that's Ryan Kerrington, the defensive end. Now, so, I mean, DJ Young's a guy who's moving up. I've talked with a number of scouts and a number of people and said, hey, this is a guy who, you know, to watch out for. So he's a guy who I like a lot and thinks a pretty good athlete. So he's a guy, you know, if you're going to watch, you know, as far as the Michigan State-Purdue game, you know, it's going to be, you know, Kerrington against Young, and that should be a great matchup.
Yeah, it should be an interesting matchup. Definitely a chance to prove himself against one of the elite pass rushers in the country who did have, what, 4 sacks last week, 5 tackles for a loss. Joe, how about you? Is there a particular guy we should keep an eye on and see what he can do this weekend?
Well, you spoke earlier of man crushes, and one of mine is Mr. Watt in Wisconsin. J.J. Watt, he'll be chasing around Denard Robinson and the Michigan gang. I look at the numbers, and as good as Kerrigan has been, yes, he's been phenomenal. Right behind him in the tackle for loss category is Watt at 18. This guy is a massive player, and if he keeps this up, I mean, he's got to be in the conversation as well. Just excited to watch him play more than anything. You know, he's got a big stage to prove his game today, or on Saturday, rather.
Yeah, definitely Watt is somebody who, if he does decide to declare, could throw his hat into the mix as being one of the top 5 prospects coming out of the Big Ten. Before I let you guys go, Justin, any news in terms of the All-Star games? What's the latest there?
Well, I mean, there was some talk about, you know, as far as the East-West Shrine Game not, you know, playing this year. Well, they have started to send out, you know, as far as invites, and they are going after a number of the, you know, Senior Bowl, you know, as far as participants or the guys who've got Senior Bowl invites. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out here as we get closer. I know they've sent out their top 100, you know, as far as guys there. They've gone off a lot of, you know, the preseason grades. And so the standpoint of, hey, who will they get? Who will be playing in Orlando, you know, the week before the Senior Bowl will be the big question that we'll have to watch for at the Union Guard, the All-Star game. Obviously, the NFLPA Texas First Nation game has been sending out, you know, invites as well, and they're as far as getting a number of good prospects. So it's a game, you know, as far as a lot of people are hoping that, you know, it's kind of rising up, obviously, with the tie-in with the NFLPA. So some good competition in the All-Star game, and so we'll have to see how everything plays out here in the next month or so.
All right, Joe and Justin, thanks both of you guys for joining us. Remember, don't forget, go to NFLDraftBible.com. You can check out Joe's mock draft, his latest mock, see who he's got going number one to the Buffalo Bills. I think you might be able to get what position the Bills will be looking for in the upcoming draft, as well as his hot and cold each and every week. Joe, Justin, thanks a lot for joining us, guys.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Definitely Jake Locker at the number one, right? Definitely Jake Locker, number one quarterback. Like that man with the helmet hair on ESPN.com said at the start of the year.
Hey, I'm not necessarily that down on Jake, you know, myself as much as other people. I don't think he's obviously going to be the number one overall pick. No, I don't think that's going to happen. But I'm going with my guy who I had from the start. It wasn't Jake Locker. It was Mr. Andrew Luck out of Stanford, who to me just looks like a stud pro-style quarterback, and we might see, who knows, we might see him playing in the Rose Bowl with the 11-1 Stanford Cardinal against a Big Ten team.
We very well might. I've loved Luck for quite some time as well. He's polished. He plays the game well. He's smart. He's athletic. He can move a little bit. He's incredibly well-spoken, comes from athletic bloodlines. You can't ask for more as a number one pick. He's basically as safe, I guess, as safe of a pick in the number one spot as you can get.
And,
as for a quarterback, that is.
And to throw out a guy, you know, to answer your question, you talked a little bit about the skill type players. How about your guy there at Ohio State, Devier Posey, the junior wide receiver? I know we focused mostly on seniors so far today, but what are your thoughts on him? To me, you know, he might not be up there with, you know, a Joey Galloway in that kind of class, but honestly, as a wide receiver, I like it better than Ted Ginn when he came out.
Oh, definitely. He's a much better route runner. He has better hands. Teddy Ginn was a stretch-the-field type of guy, electric returner. That type of game just doesn't really translate to the NFL. I think Posey comes back for another year along with Terrell Pryor, tries to put up better numbers and works himself up, hopefully for him, into the first round. Terrell Pryor earlier this week said that he is coming back for his senior season at Ohio State. Take that for what it's worth.
I would assume, based on draft stock, that he would be coming back, but obviously you never know until that day comes. But, yeah, definitely, I think DeVere Posey, if he does decide to throw his hat in the ring, could be one of the top skill position players out of the Big Ten this season.
Interesting, interesting there. I think it's time to go to our week 12, three things to watch. We only got a couple minutes here before we move on to our interview with Nate Williams, the linebacker from Northwestern. But I'm going to lead off here because I'm afraid that, you know, you're going to say something that I have, and then I'm going to be in big trouble. Number one, I'm going to go with Wrigley Field.
Oh, come on.
Just a game at Wrigley Field. How cool is that? My only concern there is in one of the end zones, I think it's the north one, if I have it right, the Ivy Wall is, like, right there.
Ridiculous.
It's so close. I really hope that nobody does get hurt, but it is pretty cool to have a football game there in Wrigley Field, and we're going to talk a little bit about that with Nate Williams. Number two, Indiana, my potential sleeper. It sounds crazy. Last week I mentioned, let's see how Illinois responds, and they got upset in the biggest upset maybe of the year in the Big Ten. I think Indiana could be a sleeper this week. I know it's not a home game, but in non-Big Ten road games, they have been competitive. You know, they should have beat Iowa. You can make a case for at home. They lost only by three to Northwestern. Michigan came down to a last-minute touchdown by Denard Robinson. So when they're not in the opposing team stadium, they have been close. It's a sandwich game for Penn State. Played Ohio State last week, playing Michigan State, a one-loss team next week. So maybe they get a little edge there. And finally, Joe stole a little bit of my thunder with J.J. Watt. Coming off what Kerrigan did last week against Michigan, I can't wait to see what Watt does. A little bit of a different guy, more of like a 3-4 type defensive end, a little more physical. I can't wait to see how he matches up with that Michigan offensive line, particularly when he's playing more closer to the center of the field, and maybe him and Schilling, a guy who could be going to the NFL as well, matching up.
Yeah, as far as the comments about the game at Wrigley Field, there is padding in front of the brick wall. It's still less than a foot away from the end of the field. I think it's absolutely absurd to put players in that type of harm. In addition, the field goal post is on the outfield wall. It's not even attached to the ground. It's on the outfield wall. I mean, it's cool, it's exciting, but it's kind of ridiculous. And as far as Indiana not playing in somebody else's stadium, don't think for a second that FedEx Field down in Washington, D.C. is going to be anything other than a home game for Penn State. I'd say maybe 100 fans from Indiana make that trip down to Washington, D.C. this week. My three things to watch for senior day start. You have Michigan State, who's saluting one of the best defenders ever to put on a Spartan uniform in Greg Jones, and Iowa sending off one of their fan favorites, lovable Ricky Stanzi. So they're trying to Stanzi the Ohio State Buckeyes this weekend. I don't know if you've seen the T-shirts. They are fantastic. You got Stanzied. The second thing is, since World War II, there have been four Big Ten conference games played off campus. There are two of them this week, two of them in one weekend versus four in, 62 years. The field setup's ridiculous. You obviously stole a little bit of my thunder because you got it off first. Northwestern is trying to take over the Chicago market, billing themselves as Chicago's Big Ten team. So check out for that. And also I'd like to see how Denard Robinson, the great man who doesn't tie his shoelaces, rebounds after committing four turnovers at Purdue. He's facing a tough end to his season, playing the Badgers and the Buckeyes. As we spoke earlier, the Badgers defense isn't necessarily what it has been in the past, but they're two very solid defenses. Both teams have pass rushers that can really cause problems for him, and I'm interested to see how he bounces back off of such a poor performance at the quarterback position.
Yeah, he definitely had his worst game of the year last season against Purdue. The weather wasn't great, but still no excuse for the picks and the fumbles. That's why he got yanked a couple times. Are you listening to The Road to Pasadena here on All Access Football Radio? Remember, we're going to stay a little extra this today. We're going to run past that 6 o'clock hour, so you can stay with us at blocktalkradio.com/collegefootballinsiders as we talk a little bit more about the game of the week, Ohio State Buckeyes at Iowa. And also joining us will be the Reverend Ralph Mancini to talk a little Wisconsin-Michigan football. Don't forget, Check it out. Saturday morning, ESPN Radio 1050. NFL Draft Bible's founder, Rick Saratella, will be joining Jody McDonald there to talk some college football, maybe a little NFL draft as well. But now we're going to take you to an interview done earlier this week with linebacker Nate Williams from the Northwestern Wildcats, who will be playing in Wrigley Field this Saturday. Joining me now in this College Football Insiders Player Spotlight is linebacker Nate Williams of the Northwestern Wildcats, who are 7-3, coming off a big upset of the Iowa Hawkeyes and ranked 25th in the coaches' poll. Nate is second on the team with his 67 tackles and has also recorded 6.5 tackles for a loss, along with 2 sacks. Nate, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good, and let's start with a big win against the Hawkeyes, your last home game there in Evanston of your career. How cool was it to end it off with such a big win?
Yeah, it was a great feeling. Especially after the game, kind of just taking everything in with all the guys around us and the seniors and all the coaches and eventually let to be all the students on the field. So it was really a great experience and a great win for the program and a great win for his team.
Was it particularly great to kind of come back after, you know, I don't want to bring up bad memories, but, you know, after you guys had a late lead against Michigan State, you were up big against Penn State. Now this time it was you guys coming on strong at the end of the game to pull out a victory.
Yeah, it for sure seemed that way. We gave up a couple of big drives early in the third quarter. Kind of looked like they're going to kind of recur again. It was kind of, we thought about kind of fighting for the butt again. But we took control of his leaders on the defense, and we found a way to win and come back in the game and bring the momentum back onto our side of the table.
And tell me a little bit about what it's like playing for Coach Fitzgerald. I was fortunate enough to meet him in New York a couple of years ago when he was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. A great guy, always fun to have him on. What's it like playing for him?
Yeah, it's really been a great experience playing for Coach Fitz. He was, especially my linebacker coach, I was really recruited by Coach Walker. But after he passed, the summer before I came up, he was and the head coach, and stuck with everything, and it's really turned out very well. You know, he's still around the linebacker room every now and then, kind of focusing out. I tried to kind of just give some guys some tips every now and then, so it's really been a really blessing in disguise.
What's he like on the sidelines? I mean, he seems to get about as pumped up as you guys do.
Oh, yeah, we definitely get all our emotion comes directly from him. He gets the guys going when they're not going, and when everything's going well, you know, he's always there to celebrate with us, and it's really been a great experience having him on the sidelines, and as a coach, he's really, really great players coach.
And as I mentioned, you guys are now 7-3, so that means yet another bowl appearance for you and your career. Has it come to the point now in the program with Northwestern that a bowl isn't, you know, even something to be a big deal? It's something that's kind of expected.
Yeah, it certainly is. I remember last year, after the Outback Bowl, Coach Fitz kind of said it pretty well that, you know, 8 wins are expected from this program. And, it wasn't kind of a sense of being satisfied. And, it really is expected to be a winning program nowadays. And I think we've kind of done a good job changing the culture around here of that. And, you know, it's expected to go to the bowl game every year. It's been that way since I was a sophomore, so even then, we were bowl eligible and still kind of trying to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And I'd say definitely going to a bowl game is definitely expected for this program.
And now this Saturday, you guys play Illinois, your in-state rival. It's on at 3:30 Eastern on ESPNU, and it's a really unique game here. You guys are playing in Wrigley Field. Talk about that, and how much are you guys looking forward to that?
Yeah, it's just a game for us, but there's obviously a big old circus going on down there, and we're all looking forward to it, and can't wait to get out there for the experience. And we're going to have a lot of alumni in town, and everyone's kind of coming back for this game in particular, so we're all looking forward to that. And Illinois is a formidable opponent, and they're going to bring the right game, and it should be a great one.
Now, I know you're not a Chicago guy, you're more of a Pittsburgh guy, but are you a baseball fan in general?
I follow baseball largely. My brother's on the baseball team, so usually the only baseball I really truly follow is his little career, but I try to follow the Pirates a little bit when I can, but it's kind of hopeless. For 4 years of college, at least.
I hear you there. You guys do have a great park, though, I got to say. And how about that rivalry with Illinois? What can you tell us about that, and how important is it to get a win against them?
Illinois is on schedule for the rivalry games for the Land Lincoln Trophy, which we just had finished last year. So we currently have it, and we definitely want to keep it.
And finally, before we let you go, what can you tell us a little bit about that offense and that rushing attack that you guys are going to go? What's the scouting report? And as a linebacker, you know, what are you expecting to see on Saturday?
You know, they run a whole lot of ear option, zone read option, and their offense doesn't change a whole lot as far as scheme-wise from last year, but they do run some different stuff. But since the new coordinator, they have a very mobile quarterback who can make plays when he has to with his feet. And two great running backs that can run really hard, and big physical backs that can play the bit when you ask them when needed, and you can pick up some extra yards, and we got to do our best at preventing that to happen.
All right, Nate, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. We want to wish you luck on Saturday and get that expected number 8 win.
Thanks, bud. I appreciate it.
All right, welcome back to the Road to Pasadena. You were just listening to linebacker Nate Williams from Northwestern, who are moving up the polls, jumped in the coaches poll this week and playing a big game in Wrigley Field. It is time to talk about the game of the week, and that is Ohio State at Iowa. Can I say Lloyd's Ohio State Buckeyes against my Iowa Hawkeyes? I've somehow become like a de facto alum here in New York of Iowa somehow, because I've been a big supporter of theirs. They let me down last week with a very poor performance in Northwestern, and I don't want to take anything away from the Wildcats. Wildcats played a heck of a game, but Iowa, I think, had chances to do more than they did, and it'll be an interesting game here in Kinnick Stadium. I know, Lloyd, you think they stink. I think Iowa's going to bounce back and play well. I was feeling what Gary was telling us at the top of the show with how they bounced back from a bad loss early in the year to really play a great game against Michigan State. I was feeling that philosophy.
Let me preface it off air. I said that I thought they think they're a good football team. They're just not up right now with the class of the Big Ten. It's been 2 weeks in a row now that they just haven't looked like the same type of team that they were earlier in the season. And I don't know if it's an anomaly anymore or if it's more of a trend the way that they're playing. Before we even get into the game, I'd like to discuss something in regards to Big Ten football. We now have the conference championship game. It's being played indoors. We're moving later in the year. Can we get some late season night games? I mean, I am so sick of seeing, ACC football. Florida State Maryland is an ESPN/ABC game this week at 8:00. You're telling me that more people want to watch Florida State Maryland than Ohio State at Iowa at night? I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, I'm so every big time game is a 3:30 ABC game. Give me that 8:00 night game where you're allowed to have adult fun for about 12 hours before you head into the stadium and enjoy yourself and be warm.
I feel you. I feel you there. I mean, there's definitely times where that looks like it would have been a better matchup. And let's be fair. I mean, some of these games at 8:00, they're not really that much better than Wisconsin, Michigan, let alone Ohio State, Iowa, which is our game of the week in the College Football Insiders newsletter, which might as well plug in now. You can get it at NFLDraftBible.com by becoming an all-access football member. This week, that was our game of the week, Ohio State at Iowa. We also have our Fans Weekend Guide, breaking, giving you a four-pack for four of the other biggest games of the weekend, Q&A, one-on-one with BYU AD Tom Holmo, our player spotlight on Rutgers safety Joe Lefege, and an interesting column, really good column by our man Bo Nostra, who saw Army play last week. And, you know, Army football, it's a little different kind of guy plays for Army than plays for a lot of these other schools. Definitely play for pay is not an issue when you talk about Army football.
Not.
But back to this game, Lloyd, I definitely hear what you're saying. The thing is, though, they're not going to play the Iowa Hawkeyes that played last week. You know what I mean? They're not going to play that team, and I don't want to steal a line from Coach Holtz, but it's a different team every week, and I think it's going to be a better Iowa team playing this week. I think the offensive line is going to play a solid game. And let's not forget, you know, Ohio State, I got this from my man Wes O'Donnell, who wrote the column Game of the Week for the newsletter. Ohio State's little winning streak here is against teams that are 13-19 overall since that loss. The Buckeyes really haven't played well against good teams this year. I think that's something that your team's going to have to answer this week.
I 100% agree. The Buckeyes have been really erratic against quality opponents and road and in road games. Iowa has bounced back well of late in their defeats. I mean, I understand that they're not playing the Hawkeye team that they saw last week. However, when you step back and you look at this team, there's something missing there from these Iowa Hawkeyes. They're not complete. And I'm not saying Ohio State is, but Ohio State can overcome that with their talent. Ohio State recruits and has better talent than the Iowa Hawkeyes. So they're able to overcome some of those holes, some of the deficiencies that they have. Iowa's not able to do that. What they have is senior day. They have the game at home. That is what they have, and that's why I think it's going to be a close game. The fact that it's on the road and the Buckeyes have not played well, starting at Illinois this year, where they just barely won that game, they have not played well on the road all season.
And I have to agree with you. I mean, the weird thing about this is, you know, I was high in Iowa before the year started, and I think if most people, if you saw the type of numbers Ricky Stanzi was going to put up before the year started, most people probably would have been with me and said, wow, this is going to be an 11-1 team. They're going to win the Big Ten.
Sign on the dotted line.
You know, I mean, this is a guy that last year almost threw as many interceptions as he did touchdowns. This year, the numbers are way, way better. Touchdowns up, interceptions down, making much fewer mistakes. Yet for some reason, they're not having as good of a season. They had a little bit of a magical season last year. I'll give you that, pulling out, you know, a victory from the jaws of defeat, kind of like they did against Michigan State,
yep,
last-second touchdown, that type of deal. They haven't had those moments, but they're going to have it this Saturday against your Buckeyes, Lloyd. I can feel it. They're going to play their best game of the year. They're going to beat your Ohio State Buckeyes, and they're going to, you know, make it down to Wisconsin and Michigan State. That's my pick. I'm sticking to it. I'm assuming you're going the other way.
I've been waiting for almost 3 years for Terrell Pryor to have a regular season game against a quality opponent that he makes you say, this is what the hype was all about. He had that Oregon game in the Rose Bowl. He had a month to prepare. This is an in-season Big Ten game against a quality opponent on the road, and I want to see Terrell Pryor do something. I want to see him be that. He's been solid this year. He's thrown for 2,000 yards. He's thrown 22 touchdowns. He's even caught a touchdown. I mean, he's a very good player, but he's not what he was supposed to be. He's not what he was built to be.
He was supposed to be Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, basically.
He was supposed to be the end-all, be-all. This is the highest evolution of what a quarterback can be. Throw the ball, run the ball, dominate a defense where the defense just kind of says, I don't know, what do we do? Michael Vick, what he did, you know, a similar type of performance. That, I'm not saying that he needs to throw for 300, rush for 100, and score two touchdowns through the air and on the ground, but he needs to lead this team to a victory. You know, it was a really tough – and you just heard what I said about Iowa. I'm not sold on Iowa. And that – the fact that this game was very difficult for me to pick tells you what I think about my Buckeyes. I'm not sold on this team. They haven't won a true big-time game. They've played two games, which at the time were supposed to be big games. Miami's fallen off the other end of the world. Wisconsin absolutely blew their doors off. And this is, I guess, a game that could push them up in the BCS rankings to kind of fight for that Rose Bowl spot. They need a win this weekend.
Yeah, they clearly need a win to stay in the hunt, Lloyd. And I think we both agree that the key matchup here is going to be both the Iowa defensive line getting after Pryor, and then Pryor making sure he doesn't make any mistakes thrown into that experienced Iowa secondary, because, you know, they will take advantage of those mistakes if you do make them. Lloyd's got it. What's the score?
I have Ohio State 24, Iowa 21. kind of squeaking it out in the fourth quarter.
I'm going to go Iowa 27, Ohio State 17, giving the Buckeyes the second loss of the season and the Hawkeyes their biggest win of the year.
Just the only, and I know statistics can lie, however, the Buckeyes are in the top six nationally in points for and points against. That nationally includes teams like Boise State and TCU who don't play top-flight schedules. They're both above them. So they are in the top two or three in both points for and points against as far as the big-time conferences go.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. You know, can't wait to talk about it next week, the aftermath of this game. And finally, it is time to bring on our man, the Reverend Ralph Mancini from the Fantasy Football Insiders, from the NFL Draft Bible, who is joining us today to talk a little bit about the Big Ten, specifically the Wisconsin Badgers traveling to Michigan. Wisconsin's another team in that Big Ten title race right now, a little bit of a favorite, not a huge favorite, but a little bit of a favorite if things stay how they are. They do need Ohio State to win. They're going to be rooting for Ohio State because they'll lose a head-to-head against Michigan State. Ralph, thanks for joining us. How's it going, my man?
Hey, how's it going? Another week, another Michigan game to analyze.
Let's see if you're going to pick them for one time.
Yeah, exactly.
The curveball of the week. Ralph, let's start with this Wisconsin dominant offensive line going up against a shaky Michigan defense that has been porous all year. And let me throw out there, Mike Martin is questionable as his constant center for Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I mean, absolutely. This is going to be a huge – yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, any chance that this Michigan defense can somehow slow down this power attack of the Badgers?
Yeah, I really don't see it. I mean, the Badgers do come into this game with a 6-21-1 record all time in the Big House, and they haven't won since 1994 in Michigan. That's a long time. I think we were still in college back there in those days. But, hey, I mean, look, Michigan – They have a two-game winning streak that they're on. They did beat Illinois. They did beat Purdue last week. But you can't overlook the fact that Denard Robinson is turning the ball over. Last week he had two fumbles and two interceptions. You can't do that versus a Wisconsin team that has scored points off of all of their seven turnovers that they've recovered over the past 2 weeks. Now, you know, as far as Michigan's defense is concerned, I don't see how they could stop Wisconsin. I mean, right now, you take a look at their nose tackle. You said Mike Martin is questionable with a bad ankle. And, you know, even if he does play, you could definitely see Wisconsin taking advantage of the fact that he's probably going to be limited in terms of his mobility by pulling their guards. And, you know, John Moffitt is one of their guards that's playing at a very high level. And another weakness for Michigan lies in the fact that their linebackers, Obi Ezeay and Kenny Demons, they tend to over-pursue and overrun plays. That's going to make things a lot easier for a running back like James White, who can cut back, hit the cutback lanes, and bounce runs into the perimeter. You know, I should also mention, by the way, you know, as far as guys who are a little bit iffy or injured, John Clay is also questionable for this game, and even if he does play, he's going to be limited. But, you know, quite honestly, Wisconsin doesn't even need him. I mean, they have James White, they have Monte Ball, and they're more than capable of carrying the load. Look, the way I look at this is Wisconsin offensive line is just very experienced. They're battle-tested. They should be able to recognize where the pressure is coming from if Michigan tries to blitz them. And but you know what? And without that pass rush, Michigan's porous secondary becomes even worse. So when, you know, Wisconsin does drop back to pass the ball, I think Scott Tolzien should be able to hit on some plays, especially if he goes to the play action game in the early downs. And maybe, you know, he might free up, you know, tight end Lance Kendricks, who's going to be able to get past those over-aggressive linebackers that tend to over-pursue. So I don't see any way Michigan wins this game. I think that Wisconsin's going to take control early. They're going to pretty much do what they want to do on offense. And I would say by sometime in the third quarter, they're going to put it into cruise control. They're going to bleed the clock. They're going to run the ball. And I see Wisconsin winning this game big.
I just want to point out there that while me and the Reverend were in college in 1994, I think Lloyd still might have been in diapers. I'm not sure.
I think it was in elementary school, I believe. About seven.
Wow. Thanks for making me
feel
old.
Or anything. Yeah, I don't want to make you feel old at all, guys, but you guys are old. All right? Ralph, you spoke about Wisconsin's ineptitude when entering the Big House. 2 years ago, Wisconsin went into Ann Arbor. They were 3-0, ranked number 9 in the nation. They built up that early 19-0 halftime lead, something that you're thinking is going to happen again this weekend, and that Michigan squad came back. Michigan squad that would only win 3 games that year mounted the biggest comeback in stadium history, winning 27-25. Do you think there's a possibility for another type of upset like that in the making this weekend at the Big House?
No, I really don't see it because, number one, as I mentioned, you know, I know that they're using 2 quarterbacks now. They're using a little bit of, Forsett is his name, and Denard Robinson, Forcier, I should say. But, you know, Robinson is turning the ball over. And then I look at another key matchup over here, and they're going to have first-year starter offensive tackle Taylor Lewan go up against J.J. Watt, who had a spectacular game last season. And that's one of the key matchups over there. At 6'8", Lewan has a hard time sinking his hips and getting underneath his opponents. Watt is just strong enough to get underneath them, knock them off balance. And, you know, I just don't see how Michigan is going to win that battle at the line of scrimmage on offense. So, you know, with guys like J.J. Watt on the defensive line and their linebacker core, if Michigan does fall, you know, let's say 19-0, 17-0, or 14-0, you know, whatever the score may be, I just don't give them much of a chance to play catch-up just because I think Wisconsin's defense is going to be so disruptive, and I think they're going to probably cause them to commit a few turnovers, and you know it's really not gonna be Michigan's day. It's just I don't think they're well equipped. I don't think they match up very well versus Wisconsin.
All right, Reverend, can you remind the listeners out there where they can catch you? What time on Sunday? I believe you guys are going 2 hours this week, a special 2-hour show on the Fantasy Sports Channel.
Yeah, well, the bye weeks are over, so we're going to need that extra time. So, yeah, we're all going 2 hours from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock Sunday morning. And, by the way, I didn't give you a final score. My prediction here is Wisconsin 38, Michigan 17.
All right, 38-17 in a blowout. And don't forget to check out the Reverend Ralph Mancini along with Ross Mandel and NFL Draft Bible founder Rick Saratella here on the Fantasy Sports Channel, where you can check out the Fantasy Football Insiders breaking it down for you, getting you ready for that Sunday of NFL football. Reverend, thanks a lot for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, great. I'll talk to you soon.
I would just like to say that I have been down on Michigan since the start of the year. I've ripped apart their defense. This is my upset of the week. I think Michigan is taking down Wisconsin, and if they don't take them down, it's going to be a one-possession game. I think that Denard Robinson's going to bounce back. He's not as bad as he showed against Purdue. Wisconsin is not as offensively powerful as they showed last week. I think both teams are going to come back to their kind of regular performances. Wisconsin, I know what they did against Indiana last week. They don't blow people out. They just don't. And going on the road, they talked about the power rush from the outside. I think Robinson can be able to elude that and kind of put that to the back burner and take over this game if he can stay healthy.
I'm going to go in between you guys. I'm going to play it safe and say it's a dangerous game for Wisconsin. Would I be stunned if Michigan pulled off the upset? No, but I think you know, for them to do it, they're going to have to play their best game of the year, and Robinson's going to have to play a heck of a game. So I'm going to say Wisconsin in a close one, not really laying it out there for the full upset. Lloyd, thanks a lot for being here with us again. I'm your host, Daniel Moglione, with Lloyd Ribner here on the road to Pasadena. Looking forward to talking to you again next week and breaking down the final week of Big Ten football.
Have a good week of Big Ten football.